We begin this hour with the Crimea crisis, which will dominate a G7 meeting at The Hague. The Crimea crisis has, like the territory of Crimea itself, been folded into a larger sense that this is a Russia crisis now. Here is former Bush administration official Paul Wolfowitz speaking to the BBC.
What's happening in Ukraine is not just about Ukraine, it's about Russia. When he goes and brutalizes Chechnya, when he goes and invades Crimea, suddenly his popularity goes up. He wants to play the Russian nationalism card. We should be playing the corruption card, the economic weakness card. He's not doing well by the Russian people. And if that would be the focus instead of how he's restoring some notion of Russian greatness, that is the issue on which he's vulnerable.
Although the latest surveys suggest that Putin's popularity remains high in Russia, and Paul Wolfowitz doesn't exactly have the best track record on predicting future political and military events, but Republican Congressman Mike Rogers, meanwhile, told Meet the Press over the weekend that the U.S. has no choice but to make the right call on a response to Russia. Rogers says he's worried that Russia may be getting the message right now that Europe and the U.S. are just going to let the annexation of Crimea slide.
I do think that we have to, as Americans, have to take a tough stand with our European partners. There are things that we can do that I think we're not doing. I don't think the rhetoric matches the reality on the ground.
It's Chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Congressman Mike Rogers, on Meet the Press. Joining us now, Kurt Volker, who served as the American ambassador to NATO back in 2008. Mr. Ambassador, welcome back.
Thank you very much.
So I've been looking at scenarios really for the past week now, and it seems that there are two themes. One would basically escalate incrementally the sanctions regime, and I suspect that's what they're going to be talking about at the G7 meeting. But there's also a lot of talk about making an end run around Putin's energy resources and getting the U.S. and Qatar to possibly supply Europe's source of natural gas. Do you think either of those are viable and are all going to be done?
Well, on the first one, the escalation of sanctions, I think that is the plan that the U.S. and the European Union have. The idea is to not rise into an immediate conflict if that's avoidable, but to make clear that we're prepared to continue to escalating to get Putin to stop, and also that we will not recognize his takeover of Crimea and hope that eventually that could be reversed. On the gas issues, I think that's a longer-term issue. The LNG receptors in Europe are really not ready quite yet, and so the volume of gas needed to replace Russian gas couldn't be brought in so easily and so quickly. In the long run, though, I think that is exactly what should happen, and for general reasons of market efficiency, let alone dependence on Russia, just to create a diversity of supply for Europe to keep costs down. Europe pays a lot more for natural gas than we do here in the United States, for example.
As someone who really knows, you were ambassador in 2008 during the Georgia crisis. Does the NATO Common Defense Treaty obligation make this a fundamentally different situation in Crimea? And thinking about the neighbors of Russia, including Poland and the Baltic states, does that limit the hand of NATO, or does it strengthen the hand of NATO?
I would say that it invokes some NATO responsibilities that we have yet to see play out. First, NATO has an obligation to the protection of the territory of its members, and that includes the Baltic states and Poland and Romania and Bulgaria, all of them right in that region around Ukraine. And they are concerned at what they see, the massing of Russian forces on Ukraine's eastern border, the takeover of Crimea, the possibility that the Transnistrian part of Moldova would also be taken over by Russia, as well as other potential moves in Ukraine. So reassuring those allies, which we have begun to do on a bilateral basis, is something that we could continue to do more assertively through NATO. The second part, that's the defense part. The second part is a deterrence part. How do we actually deter Russia from more adventurism in the East? How do we put in place measures that will change his calculation, change Putin's calculation to thinking that maybe there will be a tougher response, perhaps even some kind of military response that's going to be harmful to him and his forces that would cause him not to take those additional steps. So putting in place some of those deterrent things, that would be, for example, military advisors to the Ukrainian Ministry of Defense and military, providing them some additional equipment, maybe some exercising with NATO forces in the area around Ukraine so that there are pieces on the chessboard that Putin will have to take into account.
But aren't we back in a sort of Warsaw Pact strategic imbalance? in this situation on some level? I mean, the Russians can mass as many troops as they want on their western frontier. And there's very little that Europe and the U.S. can do about it. And we're suddenly talking about Russia and deterrence all over again. Man, that sounds like the Cold War.
Well, it does. But remember, what we're looking at now looks a little bit like the 1930s, which is a country declaring that the citizens of another country who happen to speak the same language somehow belong to them, and that's their citizens, and that the territory of that country really is rightfully part of another country, and they're just going to take it militarily. That's not the kind of thing that you can just let go easily.
You alluded to the territorial dispute in Moldova, which may be slipping into the Crimea scenario. Does it raise the stakes in that if Romania claims that there's actually some sort of encroachment, that does get us closer to the common defense obligations of NATO than Crimea does? Or does Moldova simply constitute a smaller version of Crimea, in your view?
Well, I think it represents a significant escalation and a significant risk. Moldova is also not a member of NATO, like Ukraine is not a member of NATO. So we have no obligation to try to defend Moldova. In addition, Russian peacekeepers are already present in Transnistria. They've been there for some years under a UN mandate. But they have thus far not they've divided the country de facto, but they haven't actually annexed it or made it part of a greater Russian empire. If that were to happen, and Russia were to take those further steps of making that also part of Russia, like it has done with Crimea, it then raises a big red flag to Ukraine. Because if your listeners here take a look at a map, you've got Crimea on the eastern part of the Ukrainian Black Sea coast, and you've got Transnistria to the west of Ukraine, also somewhat to the south. And there would be a temptation or an expectation that maybe Russia is now going to try to connect these territories along the Ukrainian Black Sea coast through a place like Odessa. So it's really going to raise a lot of worries about where those Russian forces massed on the Ukrainian border might really go. They could be trying to do a land grab all across Ukraine.
And as Congressman Rogers suggested over the weekend, nobody knows what map is in the mind of Vladimir Putin right now. In retrospect, thinking back to the Georgia crisis in 2008, do you think there is anything that could have been done by the U.S. and the allies that would have prevented what's going on right now from occurring?
Well, you know, it's hard to do the Monday morning quarterbacking with any fairness. I do think that we were not as aggressively engaged in promoting a Europe whole, free, and at peace over the last several years. This is something that was important in the Clinton administration, the Bush administration. We saw countries like Poland, Baltic states join NATO. That was a very effective way of promoting democracy, market economy, and security for 100 million plus people. We kind of slowed down on that because of the financial crisis, because of fatigue, because of the conflicts in Afghanistan, and because the countries we're talking about were not as developed. But without that kind of magnet being created in the West to say, we want you to develop and be part of a community, and then providing assistance to help with that, the local bad forces, and we saw this in Ukraine, we see it in the Balkans, you see the local forces there promote nationalism and separatism, and corruption, organized crime, and that destroys these societies.
And nationalism is really the prevailing mood right now. We'll see what happens. Kurt Volker served as American ambassador to NATO back in 2008. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.